The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. As some of our listeners may know, our friends at JLab Audio have been sponsors of Major League Soccer for some years now. What you may not know is they also make microphones. That's right, so if you're thinking of starting a podcast or you just want to impress your friends on Zoom calls, the JLab Talk Pro is the way to go. We got our mics recently, and I've been very pleased with the sound quality. It has four directional patterns, and all you have to do is plug it right near your USB port, and you're ready to record within seconds. It also looks amazing, so check out their mics, people. You won't be disappointed.
And you're eating your soup.
Welcome to the Soccer Soup Podcast, Episode 3, presented by Bet Online. We got Hercules Gomez as a guest. Really excited to talk to him, pick his brain about everything. And he was a teammate of both of you guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
I had Herc for a couple years, man. What a guy. This guy can tell stories like nobody's business. There's a reason why he's on television right now. He's a talker, but he's also his memory. He'll pull out facts about facts that are can't find them anywhere else. And Herc is like, he's got this knack for just finding these little details and holding on to them. Be like, oh, Gordo, remember when you had that turkey sandwich in 2006
and we were sitting mustard on it and you didn't want mustard. And
yeah. Dude, it's unreal, but I'm looking forward. I can't wait to hear what he's got to say.
Cool. Well, let's not wait. Let's bring him on. Herc, welcome.
We have yours on too, with the amount of pub you're giving this man recently. What's going on? Where's yours, huh?
Do I have it here? I'm in my studio in my house, and they set one, but I think I took it to the off. Yeah, I have that actually.
But,
I'm pumping what needs to be pumped. Come on, you know how this goes.
Yeah. I feel left out.
Absolutely do. I get it. Your team Chicharito right now. Plus, what is it? 15 and a half goals. You took the over.
I took the over, yeah. I put the 15 and a half last year at the under, but I'll take the over this year. He's
so you're playing with house money at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't make very much money last year on Chicharito, but
the only person that made money last year was Chicharito. Holy moly.
Exactly. And lots of it, my man. Lots of it.
He wasn't struggling. Gordo, what are you doing? You taking the over on that 15 and a half?
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that.
You want me to sell you on it, Gordo? Can I sell you on it for a second?
No, I think he's a goal scorer. I think he's, you know, the interview that he gave the other night, dude, it actually got me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. The one after the game?
Yeah, I loved every minute of it. I mean, you could just, it's what I want to see. It's what I want to see from a guy that's making that money. I'm not even going to lie. Like, he it's there's a lot of pressure, dude. Whether he's been how it doesn't matter how successful he's been, doesn't matter how much money he has.
Say it though, Gordo. There's a train of thought with the DP that comes in Major League Soccer amongst the players, right? Like you're okay with them making that money if they're appreciative of what's going on. Cause oftentimes we've all been in the locker room and you're like, that guy doesn't give a shit.
Totally.
You know? And it gets at the rest of the players who are scraping by, you know, living check to check, at least in our times, right? Uh-huh. The money wasn't where it is today. So I know what you mean.
Yeah, and
real quick, sell me on the over, because honestly, I'm teetering a little bit on the under. Sell me on that.
So you guys saw last year Guillermo Barros Escoloto's team. They were a train wreck. I mean, Zlatan on that team did everything he could, and it was only Zlatan. Like, it was like a miracle that you had this physical specimen, and he did what he wanted with defenders. Chicharito's not that player. You can't just dump the ball to him and expect him to do something. He's not going to beat players on the dribble. He's not going to create his own space, you know, with the ball at his feet. He's very, very good with his off the ball movement, but he needs that service. Last year, he didn't get it. You had all kinds of things going on where there were players that, quite frankly, didn't step up, weren't there for him. Christian Pavone and him never got on the same page. I forgot the player who was there, his name, Katai maybe? But he had that thing with his wife and the race. Yeah, he was booted out. I thought he was going to be maybe one of the players that could better service him. Yeah. Right. So now you get Greg Vanney, and if you guys know Greg Vanney, it's system. Greg Vanney will drill that into you. I was his teammate when we were players. I was his player when he was my coach towards the end of my career. And they will do.
You were a part owner with him in Cats, right? In that philosophy too.
Anyway, yeah, I tell you what, I wish I would have got in on the ground floor. They're flying now. But I'm being serious. You see what he does with the team, and he will drill an hour worth of video a day into you, like video session. And he wants your role to be clear, and he wants the patterns to be crisp and to make sense. And he wants you to understand how they will, you know, progress throughout the field. And if you're a forward in that system, it will be very easy. Your job, it will be very defined. And if you're Chicharito, you don't need to try to be more than you are, because if Chicharito isn't scoring, he's not doing much for you. So he needs to be scoring goals. I think Greg understands that. And you can see the moments where he wasn't good versus Miami, it's because you're asking him to do something that's not him. I mean, he had a couple of bad first touches in the box, and he tried blaming it like on O'Neal Fisher or another player.
I remember that play in particular.
Yeah, exactly. As a right back, I'm sure you remember exactly. You'd be like, what are you talking about? But to the naked eye, they'd be like, Chicharito played a great ball and that guy didn't understand.
Yeah, what an idiot. It's crazy. You know, the more you talk about Chicharito, I didn't realize how similar my game was to his, you know.
You don't give yourself enough credit, man. You had some nice feet for such a big man. I'm gonna be honest.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Gordo gives himself plenty of credit.
Let the man speak.
There are daily affirmations going on 24 times a day.
Let the man speak.
Yeah.
Herc, what have you been up to, dude? How do you like this new role or role as you've gone into media? I mean, you've obviously thrived in it, you know, and taking on that kind of, you know, been that representative on the Latino side of U.S. soccer. You know, you've done a phenomenal job. Like, how do you Thank like you. this new career of yours?
It's a lot easier to talk about shit than to do shit. That's what I've realized. So this is a lot easier on my body. My body towards the end was not good, giving out on me. Like the knee, I got the knee of an 80-year-old. So on that end, I'm much more appreciative to where I'm at now, but it's a lot of work, man. Like, yeah. I'll be honest, people see like a 3-minute clip and they don't realize like the hour or two that go into it on so many different fronts. And I appreciate that comment about the Latino representative, but being in this kind of Mexican American role, seeing both sides, it's funny because in the States, and I'm not too sure because with the pandemic and everything's gone on, the national team's been on break. I haven't been on air studio wise as much. You know, usually we have the US men's national team games at ESPN, and you know, I'll go to Nashville and I'll be with Casey and I'll be with, you know, Taylor and the guys, and we haven't had studio, so that part's been missing. So I always kind of ask myself, how am I viewed on this side? But on the Spanish side, I'm on air 5 days a week, and by default I'm like the MLS defender, the U.S. men's national team like mascot to them. You know, it's like anything that happens, whether I'm directly involved or not, I'm going to hear about it on social media. And it's crazy how it's taken on this persona of its own. So I'm like two different people in the media world. And it's kind of, at least on my end, fascinating to see how the sectors respond, but it's been fun. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of work, but it's been a lot of fun.
How much soccer are you watching on a weekly basis? Just curious.
Too much, like, Sal.
That's part of your job. I mean, it's basically your job.
Not just that. So I do a weekly show in Spanish called Ahora Nunca. It's an hour long show every day, and we do all sports. I'm one of the two hosts. So I've had to learn about MMA. I've had to learn more about basketball, a little bit more about football, you know, just to try to get by and sound like an authoritative voice on it, even though your takes are short and they don't have to be hot takes, but they've got to be at least concise and somewhat knowledgeable, even though it is entertainment. But you guys are parents, man. Like, I can't tell my wife, like, hey, I can't give the kids a bath today. I got to go watch, you know, Chivas Monterrey, you know, or I got to go watch LA versus Inter Miami. No, I mean, Dan, we tried scheduling this and we had to literally move it like three or four times. I was like, look, man, I wish I could do this day, but if I tell my wife I'm missing this, she's going to cut me in, you know, where
it's actually
where it counts.
A miracle that all four of us are at the same time on a Wednesday night. But,
so there's a lot of DVRing going on, and I try to get as much as I can in when the kids go to bed and my wife goes to bed. So from 10 on at night to 10 to 1 a.m., my work gets done. And then about 7 a.m. the next morning, it starts with the kids. So that's how it is.
How do you deal with...
There are bosses and bosses, right?
That's true.
And I know you guys have seen... Go ahead.
The interesting thing for me is, you know, how do you feel about... Because you're paid to give your opinion, right? And your opinion needs to be... Not needs to be, but, you know... Being controversial is better than agreeing with everybody, right? And you gotta have your own thoughts. And so I'm interested how you've dealt with that. Have you had a lot of criticisms of current players on things you've said? And you know, even to go in further with that, I want to get into, you know, the recent beef with like Taylor Twellman and
Josie. I honestly thought you were gonna ask me about that right now. I don't know why I felt that for me. Like,
because you know me, buddy.
When you mentioned Taylor Twellman's name, when you mentioned his name, and then you playing at Toronto, it all kind of came in my head as well.
Right. Yeah. I think that's how it works. You know what's it? So I'll share a little story with you. So when I first came into this business, if you guys watch ESPN FC, you'll recognize some of the guys I'll tell you about, like Stevie Nickel. We've all played against his team's New England team, and he's such a character. But then there's another Scottish guy named Craig Burley, and Craig. Craig kind of gave me a piece of advice without actually giving me a piece of advice. He kind of gave me like a lesson. You've got to put that part of you got to put that part of your career in the past, because it's going to do you no good, you know, in the next phase of your career. You can't think I'm going to step on toes and this is going to be bad, because the audience, the person, the viewer, they're going to recognize, they're going to smell the BS. So you have to be as honest as you can. You don't have to insult anybody. He didn't say it that way. He was just
I remember that. I remember that interview. That was on air. I watched that. And I could tell you didn't want to say something about a player. And I forget what it was. And
multiple players. And he was trying to call the U.S. men's national team mediocre. Right. And I was, you know, because I believed in my heart at the time, they're not mediocre. You know, they're just going through a bad stretch. But it's hard to argue with somebody when you see what happened in that cycle and how things went down, even though truly, if you ask me, the whole thing was a fiasco and what happened, it happened. But certain things throughout that process had taught me, you know, he's right. And I remember that process. We're in Costa Rica and Colorado. I'm sorry, we're not in Costa Rica. We're in Harrison, New Jersey, Red Bull Arena. And we're going to do Costa Rica versus the U.S. men's national team. It was the game they end up losing at home. The second game of the Hex, I believe, or no,
I don't know if they lost. Second time they played Costa Rica and they lost.
Second time, you're right. Because the first game was in San Jose. You're correct about that. And the week before, Tim Howard, who I always got along with at the national team, had this blunder where somebody in Colorado passed the ball back to him. And Tim was in an awkward position where it was a very difficult pass. And literally you had to use your hands to stop it, but they would have called him for a foul, and he decided not to, and he kind of opened his body up and dove with it with his leg, and it ended up being an own goal. So on NFC, I was on air that day with them, and you know, they're having a laugh, and I didn't really partake in the laugh, but I didn't defend it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't defend it, and I didn't make much of it. You know, I was trying to not step on toes. I was like, well, you know, I know Tim, I'm not going to, you know, rag on him right now. In Harrison, New Jersey, the night before, the guys do kind of a run through of what is the stadium, the grounds, the 45 minute to an hour training session, something light. Tim kind of comes next to me, and, you know, I'm expecting, you know, big hug from Timmy and whatnot. And he was cordial, but he was just like, what do you want me to do, Herc? Ball went by, you know, and he just kept repeating it. And I was like, what is he talking about?
Ball went by, Herc.
Yeah, like I was like, what is he going? What's going on right now? And I was like scratching my head, like ball went by. And then I'm piecing it together later on because it was really awkward, like, you know, encounter. I'm like, he's talking about this. He watched MC. Like, so things like that happen. And you have to be as honest as you can in the moment. But also, like Gordo said, like, you can tell Gordo in that moment, that segment, I'm trying not to speak ill of players that I played with for many years, you know, whether it's club level or national team level, and do right by them. But in doing so, and not just being honest about that certain occasion, I'm being dishonest with the viewer. So I had to find like a happy medium, you know, a little balance there.
I'm sure it gets a little easier when you haven't had that personal friendship and team, you know, been so close to somebody as a teammate, right?
But you guys know, I mean, you guys have been to, you know, MLS functions, and you're going to see the people. You're going to see this. This is a small circle. You're going to see these people. It's a lot easier for me to do it when I'm doing the Liga MX because I'm not going to see these guys, you know, like probably ever, maybe once, you know. When I'm in these MLS circle and national team circles, I'm going to see these guys a lot. And going to Twelman and Josie, what you were talking about, I had no idea where that came from. You'd have to ask Josie. He'd have his reasons. You'd have to ask Taylor. Nobody likes being criticized. Nobody likes sometimes when they see something on TV and they don't agree with it. I have no idea what that is about. Honestly, Josie's one of my like good teammates that I've had throughout my career. He's like such a good guy. And, you know, Taylor here, he's one of the few guys that will say something in our world. So, you know, you put two strong personalities together and, you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Has Taylor ever said anything in the past about him, though? I mean, I can't recall. I feel like he's always, if anything, stuck up for him, you know, for being the number nine that the national team's kind of needed.
You know, once or twice, I'm sure Taylor said something about Josie, like he said something about probably every other player in the pool or any other commentator has said about, you know, players they commentate on. You'd have to ask Josie what he took exception to. That's a real tough one for me there. Because if I'd be speculating on what I actually think it was he was upset about. But yeah, that's a tough one because there were some strong words said, you know, and that one's a tough one.
Yeah,
there was some strong language put out there. Absolutely. I think that's an understatement. And I think that it was a lot bigger. And I always think that Twitter beef is the most ridiculous place to actually have any type of discussion or conversation, which was also something I thought kind of interesting because Josie has been such an outspoken positive force for the national team and, you know, American players, youth players, like this whole idea of the dream realized, right? Like he's done it all. And Taylor has been that guy that you're speaking about in terms of willing to speak out and also has, you know, the background to be able to jump in and comment on an awful lot, which, you know, Herc, you're talking about that. I think that's spot on. I think when it comes from a place of experience, it's a lot easier, I think, to be critical because you have some skin in the game. You've witnessed it. You've been a part of it. You're able to comment on it, but it's still, to your point, it's tough to ever hear critical feedback. That's not easy.
Right.
But I also thought like between the two of them, because of their background, I thought at some point we would have seen something more than like three tweets than these inflammatory tweets that really go nowhere. They take it nowhere, but it's also, I don't know, maybe it's just the society where Josie felt like he needed to have a pop and that was that. And then everybody moves on.
I feel like Taylor,
I will say this about Josie. Yeah, I will say this about Josie. He's not the type to just scream wolf. Like, I know Josie's character, and he's a good dude, you know? And I don't know Taylor as well as I know Josie, but, you know, Taylor's never been the guy to me within the company to kind of...
No, that wasn't...
Blatantly spit lies.
That was definitely not, to your point, Herc. It wasn't like a, I don't like what he said right now. It was a... That's
something lingering. Yeah.
That's been boiling up.
Yeah. For a while. I'd be doing an injustice if I tried to properly analyze that, you know, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I think you should do it justice though, and get the two of them on your show.
You should.
Yeah. Could you imagine me, Taylor Twellman, Sebastian Salazar, and Josie Altidore trying to do 35 odd minutes, one like catered subject. It'd go off in tangents and it would do nobody.
That could be perfect though. You got the whole spectrum of human color there. I think everybody's represented. You're okay. We got it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Honestly, and you're probably touching upon some things that I think people should hear. And I've had this conversation with Stu Holden. Stu Holden, I forget what really happened, but something happened to the effect where there was something about race called out in social media, and Stu Holden wanted to gather because I think he said it came across wrong or somebody or something. I don't recall. Maybe Grant Wall was involved as well. Stu wanted to organize kind of a round table, and he wanted to get guys like Moadu, like myself, like Josie, like Grant himself, maybe Martino, if memory serves me correct, and do sort of a round table, because there are things within our certain world that maybe you guys won't understand from your upbringing towards mine. Maybe I don't know how Gordo grew up, or other people don't realize, you know, there's certain things that we can have a discussion about and maybe open some eyes. And, you know, I think a lot of that's needed, especially today, because these are crazy times. And I had this discussion the other day. You guys know Ugo Ehemelu. A lot of you guys have played with Ugo. I know Gargs and Gordo played with Ugo. Yeah. He's like my best friend. And when Gargan brought up the possibility of me coming on the pod, he was visiting this weekend or that weekend from Costa Rica. And I told him about it and he just laughed. He's like, man, the stories about like us, you know, either in Colorado or with Gordo in LA, and a lot of things came flashing back. And it was like, could you imagine like if social media was around back in our day, all the dumb things we did, all the dumb things we talked about. This is kind of like that to me. It's people don't know until they know. And there's an opportunity to let some people know maybe what a certain sector has to deal with, and maybe how they've had it difficult or different, and what we could do better going forward.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story is there needs to be more discussion, and it takes individuals like yourself, individuals like this, you know, this setting, which we could all be better with, but it's still taking steps, right? It's taking steps to put those conversations together, because it's an ongoing conversation. It doesn't stop. It's not going to stop.
Yeah, here. As you guys can tell, I'm a little uncomfortable talking about Josie, who I consider like a good teammate, friend, and Taylor, who I, you know, is a colleague of mine. Trying to dissect that.
That's an interesting spot for you, for sure. I want to touch on your Mexican American heritage and soccer that kind of falls into that. So I'll put you on the spot here. If you are a 17-year-old right now in today, where are you going to play? Are you playing for Mexico or are you playing for the United States?
You know, that's me personally. It was always an easy decision for me. And you know, Gordo knew me when I was like 21, you know, 22. And you can tell kind of my personality and, you know, my upbringing and my education or lack thereof and whatnot, you know? So it was always a very easy decision for me. I actually had the opportunity in 2005. I had a pretty good year with LA. And I got noticed by the Mexican national. They had I believe it was Pan American Games. And I was contacted by the Mexican Federation with the possibility of, you know, me maybe playing in that age group. And they asked about my passport. At the time, I didn't have my passport, but I had such a good season, you know, that it wasn't on my mind. I'm thinking U.S. men's full national team. So that never crept in my psyche. But if all things are equal, and I'm saying all things are equal because as a dual citizen, whether you're Mexican-American or whatever, I mean, German-American, you can have equal love for like two different cultures, forget the countries for a second, but cultures, because I was born in the States, grew up in the States. I had very little recollection of what Mexico was unless I'd go visit somebody or something, you know, or do something there. So it's more the culture, the upbringing, the family, you know, the customs, et cetera. That's a strong, you know, emotional tie. And you can feel that for another country. So if all things are even, well, then other things come into play. Okay, where's my best opportunity? You know, where do I feel I fit in? You know, playing wise, you know, as a person, you know, where do I see myself 10 years from now? Longevity, all these different factors. But for me, it was never an issue. I knew where I wanted to play if they had me.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask
one more. And maybe I didn't frame that the right way. Maybe I didn't frame that question because you obviously played for the U.S. and I would expect you to pick the U.S. 10 times out of 10. So what I'm asking is, I guess today as a 17-year-old, now that U.S. soccer, I think has taken some pretty significant strides here. And there is really a border war here with these young dual citizens. How do they make the decision? Like, how are they?
Yeah, where, it's where tough, man. It's tough because there are a lot of different, you know, stories and tales of, like, you know, the players that had jumped ship that have played in the U.S. men's youth national team and ended up going to play for Mexico, but then don't play. So, you know, U.S. soccer is like, well, in the end, we were right. They weren't very good. They didn't, you know, explode. But I could tell you said border war, and it's funny you say that, but that's exactly what it's like. I remember Paul Arriola, you know, telling me when he was with the Galaxy, you know, I think he was like 15 years old, his first go with the Galaxy. They had agents who would peek over the fence waiting for these young kids to come out and, you know, literally like, hey, introduce themselves and try to sign these kids, try to get these kids already kind of to go with them. And you see what has happened with the Jonathan Gonzalez of the world, what has happened now with, you know, Efrain Alvarez. And Efrain's a very talented player. And, you know, you're talking about two full national team coaches, not picking up the phone and like having a conversation with them, but bringing in the camp and being like, listen, you're in our plans and we'd like to, you know, have you see what this is about. That's overwhelming, especially when, and I can tell you from Efra's perspective, I know his dad is probably putting a lot of pressure for him to play with Mexico. I've seen some of the things he said. I've read some of the quotes and, you know, his father is still very much ingrained with what is Mexican culture. And even though he's in the States now, and that's, you got to understand what being a Mexican footballer is. There is no Hollywood. There is no NFL. There is no NBA. There is no NHL, none of these sports. The only thing that matters is football, is soccer. So from the time you're able to walk, you're kicking a soccer ball. It's part of the culture there. And it's such an important thing. It's what you do. I mean, cities are paralyzed during game time. You idolize your local club's players. You know, it's from you're old enough to run, you go into the academy. And if you're fortunate enough to make it, you know, you're like the pride of your family. And some of these kids are 15, 16, 17 years old, and they're already head of the households because of the income they have and what the responsibility they have. So it's such a different psyche. And yes, the U.S. has gotten better, but there's still so much, you know, such a long way to go. Sal, you have Landon as a coach, and I'll tell you what, Landon's not Latino, but if Landon, because of the respect the Mexican just public in general has for him, was a liaison for U.S. soccer and picked up the phone and called a Jonathan Gonzalez and spoke to his father or Jonathan Gonzalez himself about the possibility of staying with the U.S. That just carries so much weight, you know, Jose Torres, you know, certain Michael Orozco, certain guys who have been there, done that, you know, Omar Gonzalez, just have common ground with these people. But no, you send Thomas Rongen. You know, and Thomas Rongen lies about going to Jonathan Gonzalez's house, you know, lied to the extent where Jonathan Gonzalez's dad like reaches out to ESPN to speak to me specifically. He's like, I don't know who this guy is. He's never set foot in my house. You know, they felt wanted and important somewhere else. So yeah, we're making inroads and I can't deny it. Greg Berhalter has done such a great job of doing that. And because of that, you're seeing, you know, Sergiño Dest, you're seeing, you know, Yunus Musa, you're seeing guys like Efra, who was called into that camp versus El Salvador. So it makes sense, but there's still a long way to go, man.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Plenty of room for improvement. Gordo didn't even have options at girlfriends at 15, and these kids are.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Buddy, you have no idea. No, it's been really cool, Herc. I mean, you know, when I knew you, you know, going back to when we were both young, you know, you were, you know, I don't even know if I can say this, but you were the whitest Mexican I've ever met, you know.
I don't think you can say that.
You know, and then to see you go, you know, to Mexico, it's kind of like you discovered your roots, you know. And then, you know, I see you speaking Spanish online all the time, and I'm like, I didn't even know Herc could speak Spanish. You know, but now you're truly multicultural, and you represent very well. So
it's Herc, good to see Herc, you, let me ask you a little bit about like your career, because I remember back in the day, and the first time I think I had heard about you, you were you know, kind of bursting on the scene with the Galaxy. But I remember, you know, a long time ago looking up your career and seeing that you. You even played for like the San Diego Gauchos, which was like a PDL team, Superman, and then loaned out to the soccer
USL at team. One
point. Oh, they were USL. Okay.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Jeez. They were USL.
Yeah. I just want to talk about your path a little bit. Like I just felt like there must have been a lot of years where you just kind of grinded it out. I mean, years where maybe you were written off, that you just kept chugging along, and then you kind of had that second breakthrough in Mexico. Just kind of touch on that. Like, what was your mentality during this time?
So at a high school, I went to a high school in Vegas called Las Vegas High. Bryce Harper went to that high school. Yeah. Your girlfriend went to that high school.
My wife, yeah. Destiny.
Yeah. Oh, your wife, yeah. I'm sorry.
Wildcats,
your girlfriend went
right?
to another high school.
Not his girlfriend.
Correct. The Las Vegas Wildcats. Yeah. And you know what? Soccer in Southern Nevada wasn't a hotbed. I remember from the time I was 13, 14 years old, we'd have to play two age groups up just to find, you know, decent competition and enough teams to play against. So a little bit of that helped us. A lot of that did not help us. You know, we're playing against grown men and, you know, it's not a good thing. But, you know, in the long run, it helped. It just didn't help me personally finding a university. You know, I didn't have UNLV knocking. I didn't have schools anywhere, you know, not even a Yavapai, a school like that knocking. So it was, it wasn't like I had any type of option. So, you know, I had to look abroad. I went down to Mexico and I was trying out for this team called Pachuca, who at the time was first division, and they just won their first championship in their team's history. And it was a humble club, and they had what was like, looked like a little warehouse, like a mini warehouse with bunk beds on each side of the wall. Must have been like 40 beds. And they had showers and like a mini little cafeteria and three fields. And this is where like the teams would train, and it's second division and third division. I went and tried out for the third division team, and it was just a shit show. Like it wasn't good. It wasn't a great setup. It was very much a cultural shock for me. You know, I'd never been in Pachuca. Pachuca is like a coal mining town. There's nothing going on. It's underdeveloped. I'm like, where did I come from? I'm a Vegas kid.
Herc, were you with the Rapids when me and Keel and Colin Clark went down to Pachuca?
Yes. And you guys went to the circus. I told you not to go out, and you went to a circus tent bar. I told you, do not go out. That was still one of my favorite preseasons, by the way, because we did Spain. We did Mexico, and we did Miami that preseason. Like, ooh, MLS used to do this coach? Amazing preseason. It was Clavijo.
Fernando, they still Garcia. Do. They still do. They peace. Go to like Tucson and Casa Grande.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you don't understand what this was. It was like the worst thing in the world. And I didn't have a Mexican passport. So like, listen, guy, we're not going to sign you as a foreigner. Thanks for coming. But there was somebody who saw me there from Cruz Azul, and he's like, why don't you come in? You know, they're doing a bunch of tryouts. And he's like, I could make it so they can put you up. They'll put you up in a Casa Club, which is a clubhouse. You will train, you will eat, sleep, and train with them, and they'll make a decision. And, you know, I did like 3 weeks, and the coach sat me down. He's like, listen, I like you, but I can't make a decision until the transfer window opens, but we'd like you to stay training. So I stayed training for like 4 months. And it was a great setup. Cruz Azul is an amazing club. But as other guys would come in and do the kind of the same training path, they'd be going elsewhere because the way Mexican football is structured, there was different transfer windows for like second division affiliate teams and second division teams with, you know, a right to ascend back then. So nothing to do with the first division clubs. And there was a tryout in Puebla and they were like, let's go. And I was like, you know what? Things aren't happening here in Cruz Azul. I'm tired of waiting. I went and I ended up getting signed and I still have my contract. It's somewhere around here, but it was a month, 400 pesos, which is today in today's dollar amount would be $20, $20 a month. But they provide me housing and food, and I would
like an MLS developmental contract.
Oh my, which I did. I did. Yeah. Trust me, man. I was a team MVP on a developmental contract.
On a double on MLS developmental contract until like my 11th year in the league.
Yeah. Oh, raise your hand
if you were on developmental.
Look at Sal.
I was close. I didn't come to the MLS until 2010.
I will one up you guys. Not only was I a developmental contract, but I did developmental and senior developmental contract.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. I got a big raise. I went from junior developmental to mid-level developmental to senior developmental.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah,
went through that.
Yeah. I did that for about a season, and it was just – I was like, man, this is going nowhere. Came back to the States and on my last leg, I'm like, nah, I'm done. A buddy of mine, let's go try out for this team. I saw something, a flyer while I was in San Diego. And I was like, what? Went down, tried out, honestly, in true Gaucho fashion. It was like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. They had two fields and like 500 players. And it was really smart what they did. They did fitness testing first and they weed out all the people. So they'd be like, you're not fit enough. Thanks for your registration fee. And they'd collect the cash and keep up moving players. Yeah.
That is
so they made their money. They called me back. Excuse me. And ended up signing and playing with them that season. Scored some goals. One of the actual exhibition games, like maybe our third game into the season, was against the Galaxy. We had done like an affiliate deal with them. So we went down to the Rose Bowl. We got smashed so bad. It was like 9-1. Matt Reese dropped like two goals on us. He was playing in the field.
No.
Reese's good with his feet.
He is good. But I'm just
saying. He's really good with his feet.
Herc. Don't qualify that, dude.
Yeah. What do you want me to say, man? He dropped like two on us. I dropped one on Hartman, though. They took notice. I was 19 years old. Ralph Perez was the coach at the time. So
did
it
you
just
or did
happened.
You not pull out a Superman cape after you scored every goal at the Gauchos?
It was not a cape.
What was it? A mask?
It was a T-shirt with the Superman logo. Don't say it was a cape.
I could see you pulling the cape.
Oh my god, it was not a cape. But yeah, man, it just, you know, I got lucky because honestly, you guys know what it was like, Gordo. Your rookie year. How old were the rookies with you? You know, they were like 22, 23 years old. And in world's footballing terms, Sal, you've been abroad. That's a little late. You know, that's not the prime age to be developing young players. So I was 19 years old. And I'll tell you what, I don't think Gordo saw this part of my development, but 19 years old on a team with Carlos Reese, Mauricio Cienfuegos, Kobe Jones, Gavin Glinton, like all these young players coming through that were really good. Bunch of UCLA picks because Siggy loved them.
That was a stacked squad, dude.
It was stacked, but it was so stacked and we didn't have kind of reserve system that only certain players got to train. Yeah. So as a 19-year-old, I'm like doing laps around the field while these guys are training. And my training starts when training ends. That's when it's like, all right, bring on the kid. And I would cross the ball for Carlos Reese, last 15, 20 minutes of training session, do things like that. I would be a training dummy for like the defenders, you know, for Danny Califf's elbows, you know, in the back of my head. So, you know, that's just the way it was back then.
Hey guys, who's had an awful sunglass experience? I know I have. I'm either losing them, breaking them, scratching them. Well, it's time to make your outdoor experiences better with K9. K9 sunglasses are made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity. They're made with Japanese optics that make their lenses clearer, lighter, stronger, and Italian handcrafted frames that are impossible to scratch. Use exclusive code KananCast15 at Kanan.com to receive 15% off your first pair. That's KananCast15, KanonCast15. Kanan, clearly better.
Yeah, that's true, man. It was weird. So my rookie year, I remember in 04, we were doing the 40-yard dash, and you popped your hammy. You remember that?
I did my hammy bad.
It was the first time I ever hurt myself.
It was nuts.
And you popped it, and Ziggy still picked you over me. And he was like, all right, you're out of here. Yeah, we'll take him with half a hammy.
No, that's not true. That's false.
Kirk also
that's
beat false. You in a race with one leg. So yeah,
that is false, by the way. I actually was cut that preseason. He's like, listen, you're injured. You can't prove, you know, you can play right now. I got to go with somebody who's healthy. So I'm not picking you as a developmental. Yeah, so I actually went, I think you went to Portland, and you went to A-League, and I went to D3.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Who'd you play for there?
Gauchos again and finished the season with them and ended up playing indoor with the San Diego Sockers. And the funny thing about the indoor team is, Sal, you know what the Sockers are like in San Diego. That's a popular team.
Huge. Yeah. They actually just won their 15th championship.
That's a popular team. Yeah. They play in this arena on Mission Beach. Yeah. It's like great location. The fan base is huge. But it's indoor soccer, and indoor soccer is like a strange beast. And to play it professionally was just like a whirlwind. It's 1,000 miles per hour.
Who was your coach at the time? Was it Brian Quinn? Brian
Quinn, man. Did you remember
a guy, Anthony Ferracci, on that team?
Yes, I remember Ferracci.
He married my cousin, so we're like basically cousins.
Keep it in the family.
I'm telling you, it was nuts. Here's a crazy thing, Sal. That team lasted 10 games. So 10 games into the season, this institution in what is indoor soccer gets bought out by this company with penny stock. And I'm talking about, like, if you guys watch The Wolf of Wall Street, that type of penny stock. So when everything goes under, the team gets taken away. It goes bankrupt in that season. The players get dissolved into, you know, they go to whatever teams, you know, and I'm like, you know, back on the streets, so to say. I'm back on my parents' couch, you know, in Vegas. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? You know, it's just one of those things where I'm literally looking up information because all my buddies are teachers. All my buddies, Gordo, you know, a lot of my buddies, like Gargs, I think you met my buddy Boog as well. The whole crew, teachers. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, easiest thing to do is go back to school, get a teacher's credential. That's what I'll do. And I'll go coach. Cause that's what I know. That's what my friends do. And while I'm trying to do that, literally looking up information and whatnot, training at a 24-hour, you know, fitness by myself.
You were yoked, by the way.
Dude, I tell you what, there have been
the biggest pecs for somebody that weighed 150 pounds I've ever seen.
This guy came in, he was like he was trying to like win a bodybuilding.
Dude, that's all I did, Gordo. All I did was work out. And I didn't play soccer, so it would just be working out. You know, it's easy to get fit right now if you think about it. The hardest thing for us was that we would play soccer. So you'd get like skinny really quick.
Right.
But dude, it got to the point where Ralph Perez called me again, and he told me that he can get me an opportunity with Steve Sampson, and I'm over it. I'm like, nah, man, I don't know. I'm not about it. Then, you know, and he's like literally pleading with me not to be an idiot. Just go check it out. And I went, and I remember I got there. You guys were already maybe mid swing in preseason when I got there, Gordo. And it was like one of the worst days I've had physically in my life. I was just like beat, like, first 5 minutes, blisters on my feet. I haven't touched a soccer ball. My feet haven't felt what it is to be the impact, be on the field. And man, I just remember how hard that first week was. And it was kind of like the same thing, you know, the year before. It reminded me of when I was 19. It was like, you'll get a run when the scrubs get a run, you know, when the scabs get a run kind of deal. And slowly but surely, I started kind of working my way. Gordo was actually the man that preseason. Like, I think Gordo, you were 22 years old and you were, because they had just traded Carlos, and you were pegged to be, I think, the 9-year-old
freshman, right, Gordo?
That's right. That's right. I had them all fooled, and they wanted me to start. I had a good season in the A-League, and then I popped my hip, and I had hip surgery, and then opened the door for Herc, and Herc just never stopped from that moment on. He just couldn't anything. I mean, it was a Herc show, man. It was unbelievable to watch him that season. We won the championship. It was literally incredible. Herc was shooting from half field and we were like, it's going in. We're on the bench and it'd just be like knuckling and the goalie would be like, and it would go in. You know,
Herc, another thing I remember, I played with Jack Jewsbury in Portland. And
good guy.
I don't know. Good I don't man. Remember how it got brought up, but he was talking about you and he had mentioned that, like, I think it was a time when you started scoring a ton of goals when you went after you left Kansas City, went to Mexico, right? But
yeah.
So your name was kind of popping up and then everyone was like, wasn't he in Kansas City? Like, why wasn't he playing? Blah, blah, blah. And Jack was like, I don't know. Peter just didn't really, you know, take a liking to him, whatever. He's like, but this dude had the hardest shot. He just could kick the ball so hard. And I remember it stuck in my head that, like, he just had the hardest shot.
I'm gonna be honest.
That's why he can't move his knee because he would rip like 90 shots without warming up. And Herc could kick it like the full length of the soccer field.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to do it without warming up. I used to try hitting the crossbar from like beyond midfield before like warming up all the time. Do you remember Steve Sampson saying he would find me if I got injured? Remember that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I got a funny Steve Sampson fine story I'll tell you right now after this, but that right there, when that
gave
to me
all the pennies.
Yes, that's tell the us. One. That's tell the us. One. All right, I'll tell you really quickly. But before that, kicking the ball hard, it's a technique, like honestly, and people don't give enough credit for that. I'm extremely proud of. My dad to this day still, you know, stakes claim to that. But I have only met one person where I like that guy kicks it harder. Honestly.
And who's that?
One guy, Dario Benedetto. He plays right now in Olympique de Lyon, in the French league. He's an Argentine international. He did his knee before the last World Cup, or he would have gone. He was my teammate in Tijuana in Cholos Quinkles. He played for America as well. The guy was he is a baller, but hits it so hard. The only man I've ever met in my life where I'm like, all right, this is gonna. Yeah, this doesn't feel good. You know, like
the only other guy I could see, I saw that could smoke a ball like you, Herc, was Clint. Clint could absolutely
Mathis?
Smash a ball. Clint Mathis.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard the same. I've heard Jason Kreis as well. I've heard that from people.
I never trained with Mathis and with Kreis, and I caught Mathis at the end of his career. But he could absolutely smoke a ball. I
mean, Zach Thornton won the All-Star kick at the
Zach, you can hit a ball. I believe that.
He put that
by
big
the way,
booty behind it. And
I invited Zach over to my house one time for carne asada and margaritas. Cleaned me out.
Yeah. Dude, once Zach walked first. In the door, you were done. It was over.
It was over.
Good night.
Was
See
over.
You later.
Yeah. So what Gordo was talking about the pennies. This is the 2005 year is one of my favorite years on earth, not so much for the success that I had like personally, but for the team in general. Like our fantasy football league that year were all Steve Sampson quotes. Yeah, it was hilarious. Everything was just so funny. Everything was just like a comedy act. Everything was like made for reality TV. And I remember one day I'm shitting my pants. I wake up and I was living out here in the South Bay. And I think my then girlfriend, I spent the night at her house and I woke up late the next day and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be late for training. And I'm like speeding through from like, what is the South Bay to Carson. It's the worst feeling in the world when you're pulling up with your car and you can see the team already warming up.
Everybody has that sinking heart feeling.
Oh my God. I want to die. I want to just crawl somewhere and die.
You're just hoping and praying that like they called a meeting and there's something else going on and the session hasn't happened yet.
Dude, I wanted to really just literally die. And I could see some guys on the team know it's my car and waving. Like it's like your buddies are already like rubbing it in. I'm like, oh man, I get there. I'm not the only person who's late that day. Tyrone Marshall's late. Traffic coach, exactly. great guy, by the way. Mind you, I'm making senior developmental, so it's like $12.50 a month, right? To live in California, which is not a fun thing. Tyrone making like $200 comes in way later than me, and the coach goes, there's going to be some fines, gentlemen, you know? And I'm like, oh, man. And I'm thinking in my head, I'll get fined something. Tyrone will get fined something. He fined both of us, what was it, like $150? And it wasn't so much like the actual fine of $150. I couldn't believe I got this fine the same amount as somebody who makes like 200 times when I, like 100 times what I make. I'm like, how is this fair? I'm a senior developmental. And he wouldn't budge. So me being the smart ass that I am, I go get $150 in pennies from the bank and I come in and roll it into Steve Sanson's desk. Ba-bum! And Steve just gives me the.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Gomez. Okay. like the well played.
You got me.
Oh my God. I was going to ask you why you had such a roller coaster career all over the different clubs, but I think you just answered that for us, Herc.
Dude, that's it.
Me waking up late.
No, throwing pennies on your coach's desk when he tried to find you.
No, you know what it is? I wish my development was better. I don't know about Gordo because I honestly thought Gordo was Gordo had the bad luck of being injury prone the first half of his career. And I think he realized later what it took to keep his body, you know, in sync with his mind. So he could perform. I had trouble keeping in like the ball in sync with my mind of what it wanted me to do, you know, what I wanted it to do. Cause my development was later. Now I see kids, when I went to Mexico, I see kids who are like 12, 13, 14 years old who were technically far more developed than I was in my early 20s. It's insane. 100%. Yeah. And Sal, I'm sure when you went abroad, you've seen this as well. Like it's just part of the culture. And it made me realize how far I was in that sense. Cause when I said, if Chicharito isn't scoring goals, he's not doing much for you. Oftentimes in my career, I felt like that player. I felt like I needed to be smart enough to put myself in certain positions to score a goal, or I wasn't going to help my team, you know, build out the back.
That's a lot of pressure, man, to have that, to go into every game, like knowing, hey, if I don't score a goal in this game, I had a bad game. That's a lot of pressure to have.
That's why guys like Wando and what they do is amazing, because Wando's not a guy that I'm going to say is great at anything besides scoring goals. And that's an amazing thing to do. That's an amazing talent, but he's not fast. He's not overly technical. You know, he's not overly crafty with the ball at his feet, like a dribbler, but he's got the Gerard Mueller, part of his game where he's instinctive. He knows where the ball is going to end up. He knows where to kind of drift, where to play the ball so you can get it back. He's just such a great goal scorer. But there are a lot of us who don't have those traits, who don't have, you know, silky feet, who our job are just finishers. And, you know, I was very much one of those players towards the beginning of my career.
Yeah.
When did it get easy for you, Herc? Because I'm still waiting. That's not true, dude. You had a phenomenal career and you performed in a lot of different
On paper. Because I've got stats.
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit here.
No. That's true. I know what you're saying, Gargs, but think about it this way. I won a goal scoring title in Mexico, tied with Chicharito Hernandez. Mm-hmm. And I started five games. So I always felt consistency was my biggest problem. Though,
what you just said is an incredible skill. To put the ball in the back of the net is why players get paid astronomical sums. Gordo and I got into this argument one time. I think it was in Toronto, actually. And we were arguing about who has more pressure on them, forwards to score goals in a game, to come in and score a goal, or defenders to keep the ball out of the back of the net. And we were, I mean, literally, Who said what?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that, I mean, and I, Gordo, I may be wrong about this and correct me if I am wrong, but I thought that you had said in your past in our locker room after San Jose, maybe it was Galaxy, you characterized Wando as the best pure finisher inside the box that you've been around. Is that accurate or is that inaccurate?
Yes. 1,000%.
It's hard to argue not, right?
It is an incredible skill. And I also think that, like, and I've never really been a goal scorer outside of my high school career, which I was a phenomenal goal scorer in my high school career. But it is something that I think it comes in waves, right? And I'd be interested to hear how you guys pick up that pressure or picked it up and put it down, but also when you feel it, because I think scoring goals is something that is almost a feeling. Like the goal gets big, you start to just see things and it's almost like just a natural reaction as opposed to you overthinking it, which is almost what I feel like Chicharito was doing. Granted, he was overweight and out of shape and not committed last year, and he looks the exact opposite this year. But talk a little bit about when did that goal get big? At what point in the maturation process? Because you went through an awful lot there.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is instinct. Like, you're going to be in that position enough times where it's like second nature. But if I'm being honest, it's confidence. Like, no matter how good you are, if you're not confident, you're not going to play well. And mm-hmm. and oftentimes I'd be throwing, I still remember my first goal. My first goal, we're playing against the Metro Stars when the Metro Stars were still around. And I forgot why whoever was going to start this day didn't start. But the night before in New Jersey, I went out with a buddy. And like, I didn't go out and get crazy, but we now, you know, had dinner, had like a drink or two, nothing crazy. But it's not in my mind that I'm going to play the next day. Play, mm-hmm. let alone yeah. start. That morning in activation, you know, Samo comes up to me. I think it might have been Billy Nickel came up to me and was like, hey, Erk, you're gonna get the go, son. And I'm thinking to myself, what? Like, I didn't have
mm-hmm. yeah. no, I don't want that.
yeah. And I'm like, what? Nah.
You know? Take it back. You can keep it. I'm good.
It was actually a midfielder I didn't play because I played on the right that day. And he's like, yeah, you're gonna get the go. Just go over there. And he's like, just do your best. And remember, it was Stevie Nickel, because he would tell me, not Stevie Nickel, Billy Nickel. Billy he would Nickel. Tell me, yeah, McNichol. Or is it McNickel?
McNickel.
McNickel, thank McNichol. You. Sir. Billy McNickel, awesome guy. Awesome, like really just quality quotes. He told me. Listen, man, if you're ever in a position where you don't know what to do, just kick it in the back of the net.
You know? And you would say something like that.
A little icebreaker. But I remember I was in a position where ball gets played by Paolo Nagamura out wide. I take a bad touch because it's like this weird AstroTurf and it pops up on me. Defender's closing down. I don't have enough time to think. So I just go laces through it, kind of like sideswiped it. And I'm the chakras. You're going, you know, hard and across the face of goal. And before I know it, the ball kind of turns around and keeps dipping, hits the base of the post and goes in. And it was like one of those things where you had to do a double take. But as soon as it went in, I still remember that feeling, not only that night, the next day, but the next, like the rest of the week. Yeah. It just felt like I was loose. Yeah, exactly. It just felt like you're loose. Like you can do no wrong until the next game. And then before I knew it, one goal turned into two. Two goals turned into a start against Real Madrid on a Monday, you know. And then cameo against Chivas, you know, coming off the bench and scoring two goals. You know, it just kept adding up. And the more it adds up, the more you feel like you can't do wrong.
Yeah, it's true.
Gordo, was there a moment when you would characterize yourself as having that confidence?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the toughest thing about being a goal scorer is, you know, it's so hard to get that confidence, you know, and to keep it rolling, you know, but once you do, if you figure it out, it's really about, for me, it was about failing first, because you fail so much as a striker, because it's so hard to put the ball in the back of the net, that I had to get comfortable with failing. And at first I was holding myself back because I didn't like failing anymore, you know? So I almost didn't want to get in those opportunities until I said, screw it. I don't care if people boo me, I'm going for it. And as soon as I let that go and I was like, okay, I'm willing to fail. Like I will take that PK or whatever, and I'll get in that position. And I want to be there in the dying moments. And if I miss this, then they're going to boo me. But if I make it, you know, there, you know, you change your mindset, and that's what did it for me. I wasn't scared to take the chance.
Yeah. I do have a question for Gardo, because I never embraced the super sub role. I hated it. I hated being labeled that. And you, throughout your career, had scored some big goals in dying moments, like game tying goals, game winning goals. I still remember that. I think it was 2012 season with San Jose that you guys had. It was just like ridiculous, like one after the other. I don't know how they scraped
every
this,
night,
the 3 points.
Every time the 90th minute happened, it would just be like a tie or a win either way. Yeah.
So how did you deal with going into that psyche? Like, all right, this is my role. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it well.
Because I had no other choice. I remember we all wanted to be starters, you know, and at some point, you know, I remember having my first kid. It was 2010, right? And I became a father, and it became real for me. It was like, okay, that was kind of like my make or break moment. I really wasn't enjoying soccer up until that point. You know, I just did it. It was a job. But then my kids like gave me that love for it, and I knew that I had to go out there and be a man and earn money. That's what it was about. It was like, I wanted to go and be the best that I could be for my kids. It changed everything for me. It really did. And, you know, and if I needed to, if I wasn't going to be the starter, I had to add value. So I was like, okay, if I get 10 minutes today, and I would think this on the field, I'm going to either go and get a yellow card and like hurt somebody and affect it, or I'm going to score a goal. Like I was going out there to cause something that to where somebody was going to notice me, that I could keep my job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it was for me.
I remember a moment, Gordo, and I don't know if you might not remember this. We were in preseason. I was with the Fire, which was, what year was that? 2011 and 12. You must have been with San Jose early, I think. What year were you in San Jose early?
2011 is when I got traded late.
When you were getting traded there, yeah. Because we were in preseason in Santa Barbara, and you walked into the hotel lobby, and I hadn't seen you in a while. And you walked into the hotel lobby and you were ripped, like shredded. And I'd never seen you like that, because you were never like that. And all of a sudden, and I was like, where did you come from? Who is this guy? And there was a different confidence about you. And then from there on, that was the moment for me where I kept seeing you score goals. You were in Toronto scoring goals at the death, and you were the man. Then in San Jose, the Goonies. That was one of the wildest teams to play against and watch you guys, the dynamic between you and Lenny and Wando. I mean, it was insane. And it was insane playing against you, because the confidence between all three of you, which bled through the rest of the team, but there was no losing. It wasn't happening. The belief was so deep that you guys were going to score a goal or break a leg, one or the other. Yeah. And it could have been your own
Ash
leg.
Brothers.
Like, who knows?
Ash Brothers. We were.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Cringing.
See, I never embraced that. And I think that was part of the reason, like, it ate at me.
You didn't, because you were so good at it, dude. Like you said, started five.
I didn't
want to
be.
Led the,
yeah.
You know,
no, I mean,
you didn't want to be.
I didn't want to be like pigeonholed.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was tough. That's a hard thing. If you don't want to be it, it's
but almost probably played that year with such a huge chip on your shoulder that you wanted to prove that coach wrong every time you got onto the field.
You know what? It was weird, Gordo, because I literally had a situation where, and I'm over it now, and I've spoken to Peter about it, but literally Peter Vermes in Kansas City, you know, Wiz at the time, we were negotiating a contract. And I was going to sign 4 years for like 140, you know, 160, and go up there until, like, I think my last year was like 220.
Which,
you know?
By the way, that was a good salary.
It was decent back then. It was decent. Yeah. Play national team players were on that back then, you know, that were like fringe national team players. It was decent salary, you know, decent salary today, you know, for people listening to us, but it went from that situation to me tearing my knee, like the first week of preseason. And then me kind of like not playing. It was like Curtinoffo got let go. The GM becomes a coach. I'm not fit. He's like, you know what? Even though you're now fit, you're not of my liking. It goes from here's the negotiations. My agent, Richard Moskins, is like, I'm getting no calls. I'm getting like nothing back, no responses, to final offer, $70,000 a year, take it or leave it for the next 4 years. Like no scaling, no nothing. And I was like, wow. And I had been at that point, you know, MLS vets, made a national team debut, Copa America, won multiple MLS cups, won an open cup, was a team MVP, scored the first goal in a stadium's history. Like I thought like I had a little like cachet, like a little name to myself. And when you get that, it's like, it's sobering, man. It is sobering. You're like, wow, like, where do I go from here? Like, this is, you know, I'm driving a Saturn Ion. It's not even an Ion anymore. The O fell off in a trip from Vegas to Kansas City when I'm moving my stuff, you know? I'm like, well, what am I doing? Like, what's going on with my life? No, sorry, Rich. I'm not gonna do it. Yeah, and I had this opportunity to Puebla. They go, it's a 6-month contract, take it or leave it. It's not much money. And I went the, I've got nothing else. And when the opportunity arose, and when I saw, it was just such a culture shock, like being in first division in Mexico, because even though I'm at a humble club, but I'm realizing like the value of the sport, you know, we're getting paid in cash net. And I think when they were late, like 2 months to pay some of the guys. So when we finally got paid, they were like, listen, the young guys and the guys who don't get paid as much going on a Monday, Tuesday, the rest of the guys, Wednesday, the guys who are like, you know, the heavy hitters. And Carlos Reese was on my team in Puebla. And I remember I went on a Monday and I start looking around and I'm with like the academy kids who are like now first team players, you know, still in their first contracts. I don't make anything of it. I leave with my envelope. I must have not signed something properly, because that Wednesday they called me back to go sign what I missed, you know, in the tax forms. So as I'm waiting, I see guys coming out with like huge manila envelope, like, and I'm like, what is going, like, these guys are like, you know, and by this point I'm like 5 goals in, you know, to the season. I'm like, what's going on? I start really realizing the amount of money that's like in soccer, and it kind of lights a fire underneath. Like, dude, this could be a profession. Like, this could be something, you know, life-changing for you. And it just kind of takes a life of its own. And that year, 2010, I mean, this goes to show you how little I made as a footballer, but in that 7-8 month span, where there's one season ends, the World Cup happens, and another season begins, and I get transferred and a new contract, I made more money net than I'd ever did in my life gross, you know, as a footballer in MLS. That just goes to show you like what I wasn't making in Major League Soccer, you know?
We ran into each other when you were at Santos, Herc, and on the field. And that was a moment where I felt similar to what I saw in Gordo. I saw that in you. It's a different persona. And
I remember seeing
Sal, you can probably comment on this. when you come across forwards, you either know that you can eat their lunch, or you know that it's going to be a long day, and you know it as soon as you can see their eyes. It's something like they can't hide it.
Yeah, and they have this pregnancy glow like about
them.
Dude,
it's incredible. It's wild, man. There's just this, the aura. And it's like Thierry Henry had it everywhere at all times.
it's wild. Crazy,
you can see it in these forwards, and you had it. And it was something, it was like, it was all over you. And it's like, oh my God, dude, he's a different guy.
You know, Gordo said something right now that kind of resonated a little bit ago when he was talking about what changed in him. And, he saw it like he needed to do it because it was his job. When I went to Mexico, I got put in positions where I go to a new team and they buy me. It's an actual transfer. Mm-hmm. So here's a team, like, we're going to buy you from another team and then pay you to come play for us. So I immediately go in all innocent and, you know, kind of doe-eyed and think this is like the greatest thing on earth. And your teammates don't talk to you. They won't pass you the ball, because you're taking somebody, one of their friends, one of their like brothers' position, which means you're taking food off the table for their family, which means it's not just their family, it's who they're, you know, kind of working for. And I found this like all the time in every single club that I went to. And it was the same thing, not only for me, but for it's a very cutthroat. So I go in now with this dog eat dog mentality where, you know, I gotta be just as cutthroat in my play and worry about what I got to do. So my whole time in Mexico, and this is a reason for me moving around as much, I was like, I've got a very small window to maximize my potential, you know, and make as much as I can and go to the next, because I was 27 years old, didn't make any money. At 27 years old, I started kind of get a little taste. And I was like, if I want this to last, I got to be smart about it. So it's like this opportunity came about, and that was my own agent, you know, for majority of my time in Mexico. It was like, all right, what can we do? How can I get a better contract? And the club would come to me, this team is interested, because they're willing and you know, able to do these transfers
right? I mean, in the business too. And at some point that moving around, Herc, I think that, you know, you hit it on the head. I moved around a bunch. Herc, Gordo, you moved around a bunch. Sal, you've been Mr. Consistency in a lot of different places, which is also a great thing to have that security. But at some point it gets you, it's empowering, and you finally see that there's value in you. And you know that once you know that, it's easy to walk into another locker room, and it's easy to walk in and find your spot instantly. Right. And then own the room, and also own your credibility within your team. And then all of a sudden it's this, okay, if it ain't good here, I'll go to the next one. And I'm going to do the same thing, and I'm going to score goals, and I'm going to earn my spot, and I'm going to get back into it. And I think that, that changes. Once it changes for you, there's no going back the other way.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if you've ever listened to one of our pods, Hercules, but basically Gordo is going to read five questions to you. You have to answer all of them, but you can plead the fifth on one of them.
Okay.
If you answer all five, you can then ask us a question that we must answer.
Each one of you guys?
Yeah, you can kind of just give a broad question that we all have to answer.
Okay, perfect. All right, let's go.
I got to change up. These answers are not hard enough. Based on our last show, where Grant put me in a tough spot. All right, I'm just going to say that. These are way too easy.
Dude, Grant Wall put Gordo in a body bag. Just zipped him up.
Oh, good night, God. Gordo. That's the thing. Gordo, Sal, I don't know you well enough, but Dan, Gordo, and I could easily bury each other. We know each other. Like,
no one on here knows anything about me, so I'm good.
All right, better league right now, MLS or Liga MX?
Liga MX.
Okay.
We're talking level,
layup. We're starting easy.
All right, who wins World Cup first, US or Mex?
I think the US. Yeah. And if you'd like me to elaborate on that,
just looking at, I want to hear a little bit about that. Just the youth.
Yeah. And Mexico's got a weird situation where they overinflate their market and they overvalue their domestic product, and it's very difficult for these young, very good footballers, because Mexico at the youth level is like a world power, but they don't want to partake in the world market, so they don't sell these players abroad. And when they do, they're asking, like, Pizarro, who's in Miami right now, they wanted 20 million for him. You know, that's not going to happen. 26-year-old, 20 million, it's only playing in Liga MX. So they got an overinflated market, and they don't think they need to change that. So if that doesn't change, they don't get more players abroad to kind of sharpen those irons, and the US does, it's just simple math.
Herc, why do you think Mexican players don't play more in Major League Soccer, and why don't Mexican clubs put Mexican players in Major League Soccer?
The price tag, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think
why don't they put them in just to showcase them and put them in the windowsill?
Easy answer to why there are no loans is because they're not going to make much money off of a loan, you know, and it's business. The also easy answer to is the pathway. It's much easier to get to Major League Soccer once you're away from Liga MX, especially for these national team players, because now they've got this cachet, they've got this shine of what is a Mexican national team, which is a huge hype machine. Like, marketing is insane with these players. And it's much more attractive for these guys to then come to Major League Soccer, because they're going to make money they won't make elsewhere. And they'll be away from the Mexican press. It's not the same press here in the States as they have in Mexico. I'll tell you what, it is insane. There was one moment where I felt like I was one of the Beatles in Torreon and Santos. You know, I go do an autograph session at the Puma store because I was our official team sponsor, and we had security leading us there. But as soon as we're done, it was like, security bounce. All right, let's go. It was a mall filled of people who were there to see me, Mark Rosas, and Oribe Peralta. And we literally had to run to our cars, and we're being mobbed by people. Like, it's all they have there. So it's just, you know, they want to get away from that. They want to get away from the feeling of always being seen, of not being normal. And the US gives them a perfect, kind of situation for that. So I think that's why we see it more on the latter years when they feel like they're overwhelmed with that.
I got a quick question, Herc, and you may know the answer to this. MLS hasn't been shy to that their goal is to be the best league in North America, and they've kind of stated this, and they've always kind of wanted to be better than the Mexican league. Does Mexico have that same kind of, I don't know, goal in mind with the MLS? Are they just consistently trying to be a better league than the MLS, or do you think they're just kind of going on
I think they're not thinking about it, because the train of thought is they're already better. They're not trying to be better. They're already better in their eyes.
And they don't see them passing them anytime soon.
And they don't see them passing them anytime soon, whether it's national team or it's MLS as a league, a domestic league. They're not worried about it. And it's an air of confidence and arrogance that they have. But they have it towards a lot of, it's funny because it's a lot of money in Liga MX, and they could be top there are a lot of pundits that would argue it's top 10 in the world. I think it's scraping that 9, 10, 11, 12. You can nitpick, but they definitely have confidence in what they have in yeah. their product.
Good answer. All right. So rank these former soccer players turned analyst. Stu Holden, Alexi Lalas, Taylor Twellman, Winalda, Dan Gargan, and let's throw yourself in there. Let's brag. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Let's brag a little bit.
So I plead the fifth. Guys.
No, you can't.
He does not want you to for this one.
That's the only good question in this whole dang thing.
Oh, busy. Dave Chappelle voice.
We have right a here. Rebuttal for this. We got to come up with a rebuttal. We can't let him get off that. all right. Screw you, Herc. All right.
This is LA where we Galaxy expected you to think on your feet, Gordo.
Huh?
I said this is where we expected you to think on your feet, but that's our mistake.
No, I'm not smart enough. I mean, Grant Wall. I mean, he put my brain into a pretzel. Okay, LA Galaxy or Seattle Sounders? Who's your club?
Who's my Seattle club? You know,
or LA? I mean, who do you represent?
It's funny because I always get asked, like, who's my club? I'm sure you guys do as well because you've played for so many clubs. Like, who's your club? Who's the club? You know, and I don't really have a club. They all let me go at some point, you know. But but I do. I did enjoy to this day what the Seattle Sounders are about.
Do you? That's surprising to me. I mean, you've won a championship. Or did you win one with both?
Yeah, with both.
Yeah. So the quick story, when I was playing with Santos and we would play them in CONCACAF Champions League, Chris Henderson, who is now the sporting director at Inter, would always come up and talk to me. I know Chris Henderson because his brother. His brother played with me at the Sounders when I got loaned out A-League, like back in 2003, I believe. Anyways, before the games, he would come up and talk to me and ask me. He was the only person to ever ask me, while I'm still an active player, I'm like 29 years old, what do you think you're going to do after you play? And it got like me thinking. And the next time because we face him like every year.
Yeah, you guys did.
Yeah, he would ask, you know, I finally came up to him. I know what I want to do. I said, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I kind of want to do what you do. He goes, I'll tell you what, in your off season, if you really want to do this, call me, we'll bring you down. You shadow me for a couple of weeks and see if it's what you want to do. And he's the only player that's ever opened up a platform like that to me or even offered it to me. And I thought it was the coolest thing. I thought he was like just the greatest guy. And I start working in TV and I start realizing what that job entails and what it really is. And I'm like, I don't want anything to do with it right now. You know,
so you never took him up on it?
No, I didn't. I've never took him up on it. And it just seems like it'd have to be the right opportunity for me to ever do anything like that. Cause you guys, I'm sure are like me. We've moved around so much that when you finally have stability, it has to be the right thing for you to actually break that stability.
For sure.
Why Seattle? Yeah, why did you pick Seattle? Why do you pick Seattle?
They've just been so good to me, man. I had a pretty good string of games where I would score against Seattle and CONCACAF, you know, Champions League. Their fans, like, it wasn't ribbing. It was just banter. It was good banter. And they always, like, treated me well. Adrian Hanover from when I played with him in the A-League, she's always just, like, the nicest guy. Brian Schmetzer was the head coach back then, assistant coach with Siggy. It was just, like, such a great fit and need for what I was going through in that moment. And the city of Seattle just treated us well, my wife and I, and this is still a place that, you know, we love.
How many years did you play there?
Two A-League. And then my last season.
Last year of your career was in Seattle.
Correct. Last year.
Oh, you
last
went out as career. A winner. I love that.
That's right.
All right. Last one, man. And you can't plead the fifth. So this is great news.
Yes.
This is great news for me. All right. Better teammate, me or Gargs?
Ooh, man.
Easy.
Teammate?
Hey, remember those old times, buddy?
Oh, my God. No, because this is difficult because I'm going to be honest with people. Like, we had a crew in L.A. that was like our little, like, you know, get together on the weekends crew. And it was Gordo, Ned Gravboy, Josh Gardner, and then sprinkle in with the other players on our team. Gordo and Troy would be in there as well. But like, we go out all the time. So this is what I'm saying. Like, we don't know each other's like
how much.
Yeah, exactly.
Gordo didn't know you spoke about Spanish until earlier in this podcast.
Why would he ever need to know that? I mean, like, Gordo's never spoken Spanish to me, so how would he know? Like, what would he be in a position to be like, oh, he speaks Spanish? But Gargs was the exact same for me in Colorado. Like, I remember being in an empty bar that's not supposed to be open, Republic, shout out to Republic, and it would just be Colorado Rapid players organized by Gargan. Like, Gargan was the ringleader of organizing the night outs in Colorado. So this is a difficult one. You're speaking to the choir. You know, you're preaching to the choir. So I'm going to go with who would protect me on the field, and that's the defender.
Thank you very much.
Are you serious?
Just say it, Herc. Say the name, just so we're all clear.
Daniel Gargan.
Yes, sir.
This is why I know that he likes me more as a teammate, because whenever you pick the other guy, you would feel bad.
He knows that you could deal with it. He knows
that. Can I tell you who was in this Colorado crew? You had Pablo Mastroianni, who would make a night out, and you know, and it's like crazy because he's one of the veterans. You had Mike Pecky. You had Kyle Beckerman, who is one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet. Kyle Beckerman, my last year was a strange year for me because I started working TV my last season. So I kind of got this weird feeling from guys, like whenever they were around me, things would get quiet, you know, like all the media members here in the locker room, get quiet, you know, they'd be extremely nice to me, but even on the field in the training sessions, right? Exactly. Even on the field in the training sessions, they bite their lip when I knew they wanted to say something to me, right?
They'd be like, Herc's coming, be quiet.
Yeah, well, even our rivals, our opponents, I could tell they wanted to say something and they would stop. Kyle Beckerman was like, fuck you, you fucking TV. Go fucking TV right now. Fuck you, fucking TV. And he's like, he was like the nicest guy to me in Colorado. And after the game comes up and gives me a hug, but I still to this day think it's like the funniest thing. He'd be the only one to ever, you know, go there.
Yeah. Oh, two shits, man. That's good.
Yeah. KB loves talking shit. Loves.
I like that answer, but you know, I guess I got to deal with it. Herc, yeah. It's been a pleasure to have you on, buddy.
Yeah, good Herc,
to
talk thanks,
to you.
Man.
Good to catch up.
Really appreciate you being on, man.
What an incredible
show. Guys.
If you're ever back in San Diego, let me know.
Oh, all the time, man. Yeah. There's Tacos El Gordo. That's my spot.
Is it? Oh, we have my family has some restaurants in Little Italy, so we'll go have dinner there.
Oh, don't just throw that out like it's no big deal.
Restaurants.
The people on the pod are tired of hearing about it.
In prime real estate in San Diego. No, my family has a few.
It's no big deal.
You want to go?
I will take you up on that.
So you want to go to Mozzarelli's? You know, we got them both.
Barbusa.
Herc, you're an absolute legend, brother. It's
thanks, guys. It's been fun, man.
Thanks for the time.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you, guys. Take care, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, man.
Well, thank you, Hercules Gomez, for being on the podcast. Yeah, that was an interesting pod. I feel like whenever we get, like you said, these soccer analysts, they like to talk, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that hour and a half.
Well, just like Dan said, this guy remembered stories about stories that were long gone out of my mind a long time ago. So. But a dude, that was a great little sesh there.
Yeah, great guy. Thanks for being on. Once again, thank you guys for supporting us. We'll be back soon next week. We have a good guest lined up. You guys will see early in the week. And thanks again. Thanks for listening, guys.
Is where you make life's most beautiful memories.
But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.